I was just wondering, do you remember?
Remember what?
Oh, just do you remember?
Oh, 21st of September?
Oh yeah, baby.
Do you remember?
Welcome, everybody. It's the Maggie Dawn Show. We're chasing the clouds away on this 21st of September. We hope you remember to tune in every day on the free Civic Media app that you can get from the App Store, Apple, Android, whatever floats your boat, and you can listen crystal clear wherever you are. And of course, connect with the show with one click. You can do it the old-fashioned way here today, too, 844-967-2789. We've got the call lines working, the text lines working, and here's what we got queued up for everybody today. First, I want to start with this question. What do you think about the UAW demands and the current status of the strike? What do you think it means for labor generally? Do you think the demands are reasonable? And we're going to talk about that. The second thing I want to talk about is what happens when politicians try to leverage their lawyers and what role a government lawyer plays within a political context. And then in the second half of the show, I've got my great friend and executive director of the Legal Aid Society, Colleen Foley, joining me. We're going to talk about legal aid, but a whole bunch of other things because we had the pleasure, I hope, of working together for a few years. So that should be fun in the second half of the hour. But let's start with the UAW and the demands that they're making. So as I'm sure, unless you're living under a boulder, you know that the big three automakers, their employees are on strike. And that's not, they're on strike for a damn good reason. And I'm going to talk about some of the reasons that that it's good that they're on strike, that they should be demanding more wages. But then I want to get down into the nitty gritty of what exactly is being asked for, what the cost to the big three automakers are, what their profit margins look like, and what their competitors are paying for labor as well. Because therein lies the rub, folks. If the demands shut down the business, there ain't no jobs to be arguing over, if you catch my drift. And we're going to get there. I want to start with this place setter, though. And of course, you know, I want to hear from you. You disagree, you agree, you're not sure. Hey, explain more of this to me, because I'm trying to approach this both as someone who deeply respects and respects organized labor, that believes every worker has an inalienable right to organize, that is the only way rank and file employees can push back on owners and managers. That's it. That's the reality. For crying out loud, if you're a Catholic, the Pope has acknowledged for basically over 50 years the inherent dignity, the need for labor to be able to organize. So it's not about unions, not unions. I think unions are good. We all know that unions raise overall wages. But I think the demands, and I'll tell you what I think right now, I think the demands of UAW and the expectations that they're setting for labor nationwide, not just unionized labor, but non-unionized labor, as well as their own members, and the general public are too high. They're sky high. And it's setting up a confrontation that will make trying to negotiate to a reasonable middle ground nearly impossible. And my further concern, if I'm able to demonstrate to you that I think some of the demands are just too costly, my further concern is that this places the Democratic Party and whomever their nominee is, presumptively Joe Biden, in a very precarious place, right? Because if the automakers shut down for an even longer period of time, the economy can take a hit. Joe Biden's a man of the people, a man of the working class. He needs to support unions. But what happens if we're in a stalemate? I think there are some risks here, and I think we need to have a nuanced conversation about it. This isn't, do I believe in unions? Of course I do. half my family worked in coal mines in Wisconsin and were abused by management. I've certainly been in an employment situation where I would have really appreciated a union to advocate on my behalf. Join our conversation about the UAW strike, 844-967-2789. So let's set the table here, okay? Like, what are the facts on the ground? Okay, first things first, record profits for the big three. Just record profits, $37 billion last year, okay? But do you know what the margins are in the auto industry? Very, very thin. And so what you've actually seen when you look at their stock price, because these are publicly traded companies, their stock price, despite these record profits and their stock price over the last 20 years or so, it's been flat. And remember, we almost lost the big three during the Obama administration. So again, flat profits for more or less 15 years, excuse me, flat stock prices for about 15 years. During that same period of time, the overall equity increase in the overall stock market value is like 276%. So that's important context. What else is important context? The CEOs are making out like bandits. I mean, there is a very real wage gap here, folks. And absolutely every frontline employee, every hourly wage worker at large corporations, most certainly including the big three automakers, they have a right to be angry. If corporate executives are getting 40% raises, it is a natural question to then ask, why isn't the frontline employee getting 40% raises? And make no mistake, I'm not here to defend the executive compensation. I think it's pretty disgusting. I don't even think it's more, you can't defend it morally. You can't defend it, I don't think, on economic grounds. But here's one of the issues, right? So we started with sky-high profits, but let's understand we've got flat stock prices and we got razor-thin margins. So both all of those things are true at the same time, and they're complications, they're complexities when you're talking about negotiating with a collective bargaining union. When you're talking about, do we share a factual understanding of what is possible in these negotiations? I am stating as fact the executives are overcompensated. It's disgusting. I'm not here to defend that. They've gotten enormous raises, raises that outstrip the compensation that average working folks and certainly wage hourly earners at the big three have been compensated. But check this out. The pay packages for executives at these companies, grotesque though they may be, can increase in a way that simply isn't true when you look at the thousands of wage workers. Now, does that mean that they should be? No, they shouldn't be. But let me put it to you another way. If, let's say, you take GM CEO, Mary Barra, if she forfeited her entire $30 million paycheck and redistributed that money to every single worker, every rank and file worker, non-management, that would basically be a few pennies for employees on a per employee basis. What we're talking about here is both a problem of perception and the very real economic problem of scale. Their demands right now, and now let me outline the demands from the UAW. There's effectively four core demands. They are as follows. They want a 36% real wage raise, stepped in over 4 years. Now, did workers at the big three take cuts in benefits and wages back when the automakers were about to fail? Yeah, they did. But of course, in that circumstance, that was in their interest, because if you don't have an employer to go to a job with, you're not making any wage. And so have these workers been hurt by inflation? Of course they have. Should they be getting a sizable percentage increase? Yes, they should have. Well, You might ask, what was the UAW, excuse me, the Big Three's response to the 36% demand? It was to offer a 20% demand. That was flatly rejected by the president of the UAW, saying, not even close, it's not even worth talking about. What else is the UAW asking for? 36%. They also want workers to work a four-day work week and get paid for five. I'm going to repeat that again. They want workers to be paid for a five-day work week, a 40-hour work week, but they only want to work 32 hours. I don't know about you. I've never had that deal. They want to ensure that even if any of the big three automakers have to lay off employees, that those employees will continue to earn their usual wages. You may say, what? Wait a minute, you lay off people because your business isn't going to make it, but you got to still pay people their normal wages for some period of time? By the way, it was that benefit that nearly took down the industry, in addition to some other economic factors 15 years ago. Here's what else they're asking for. I'm going to put these into just a fourth basket, right? So you got 36% raise. You want to work 32 hours, but get paid for 40. And if you get laid off, you still want to get paid your 100% of your wages. Here's the fourth bucket. They want to put pension plans back in the big three automakers. By the way, those were phased out 15 years ago when the industry nearly collapsed. They want full medical benefits for retirees and pretty aggressive cost of living adjustments. That is a very rich basket of demands. Very rich basket of demands. So when we come back, I want to dig into this and then I want to hear from all of you. So if you want to weigh in on the UAW strike, and again, we're not arguing about whether or not executive compensation is correct. It's not. And we are not arguing about the validity and importance of unions. They are deeply valid. They are deeply important. And every worker has an innate right to organize. Join us, 844-967-2789. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Keep it locked. We'll be back with more. Might be Noelle, but I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back. We're talking all things UAW strike. Two unassailably true points. Record profits and executive compensation is out of control. These are not debatable. But the nuanced factors is that the record profits sometimes belie the fact that the stock price reflects the uncertainty in the auto industry. And I'm going to come back to that in a minute because margins are extremely thin. The second thing, of course, executive comp, it's ridiculous. Ridiculous. The typical laborer back in the day, right, would get paid more as your productivity increased. But that basically broke down about 25 years ago. Productivity has gone up by 52% since the year 2000. But hourly compensation adjusted for inflation has only gone up by 30%. So that means more or less average real wages for workers are at best flat. Once you factor in inflation. Another little perspective. Under the union's 1999 contract, so a 24-year-old contract, Their wage was $43 in today's dollars. $43 an hour in today's dollars. That's under their 1999 contract. But under their current contract, the 2019 contract, they only make $32 an hour. That's what I mean about the real wages are at best flat. Okay, so that's all reality. It's also true that in 1978, CEOs made an average of about $975,000 an hour, roughly 60 times the auto industry's average hourly pay at the time. GM's CEO made $29 million last year, 400 times the average auto worker's annual pay. So yeah, those things are a problem, and the UAW should be making more money. But here are some of the things that happen if the auto industry can't pay out these demands. And that's really the root of the question. So here's what. All those demands would equate to about a $64 per hour wage, with bennies included. That's real cost. Okay? That's currently. With all of their demands, if they were given their demands, with all those additional benefits, the real cost per hour for UAW would go from $64 an hour to $130 an hour. That's more than double. And the problem is, foreign automakers, their all-in cost for workers, $55 an hour. That's the problem. So the big three are already at a significant competitive cost disadvantage. If by giving UAW everything that they're asking for, the big three cannot maintain competitiveness, those businesses go away. They go away. And lurking behind the UAW's demands, and they say this pretty explicitly, is simply the assumption that the big three will continue to exist forever and ever and ever. But if that assumption isn't correct, boy, we've got a problem. By the way, all-in cost for unionized workers in Mexico, where more and more automakers are moving their plants to, that's about $32 an hour. All right, let's go to the phone. Anya, we got Tom. Tom, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you say about the UAW strike?
Hey, Maggie. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. Second, I think that one... Of course, the union is democracy in the workplace. Two, I wish, honestly, that the Democratic Party would maybe adopt some of these negotiating skills that the UAW is doing, because we always seem like we end up with nothing and the Republicans get everything. So, yeah, I agree with you in terms of some of the things are outlandish. But I also think that if you don't start high, then you're going to end up, you know, with pittance, basically. So I really do believe that. And I think this will also maybe invigorate some of the other unions out there, because they probably will get a nice, you know, package when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tom. And my whole point of this discussion today is, hey, you have to realize what is happening in that marketplace in order to assess the union's demands. We all agree, at least most of us, I don't see CJ on the call deck, that these workers should get paid more and a lot more. The question is, have the expectations been set too high that compromise becomes unlikely? We have a prolonged strike, the economy takes a hit, and Biden takes a hit because of that. Your perspective, Tom, is appreciated. Chris from Sun Prairie, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What's up, man?
Hi. Well, I totally disagree with you. I completely support the union and all of their demands. As Tom said, I don't think you go to the bargaining table and start low. I think you start high. I don't think the demands are too high. Not sure how your life has been, but I've been through layoffs, four of them. I know what it does to a family. I've been in a place where my husband was employed by a one-horse town. We lived in a one-horse town, laid off everybody, marking in the housing market bottomed. We lost a job and equity in our home in the same day. It is very devastating to families, and this goes beyond people just losing their jobs. And the selfish people at the top, they need to take a haircut this time. This is what we heard all through the meltdown.
So let me just interrupt you and ask a question, Chris, because I agree with everything that you're saying. All I'm suggesting is that simply by looking at executive compensation, even if we shrunk their comp by 200%, it's still not enough to pay for everything that the unions are asking. Hang on, Chris. I'm going to come back to you when we get back. Then we're going to be talking to my friend Colleen. Keep it locked, everybody. Love it when Anya's in the booth picking the music for the show. It is a highway to a danger zone. That's kind of my point. That the expectations have been set so high that either it makes a deal very hard to reach, which could put the economy in peril, which then puts Biden's campaign in peril, or more directly, whatever they reach, whatever agreement that's reached, it won't meet those demands and Biden will be blamed. Some great texters coming in. We're going to go back to Chris on the phone. So hang on. I want to hear more from you. A texter asked me, how does 30 million distributed 186,000 employees equal pennies? Not my math. I'm quoting from an article in the Washington Post by Catherine Ramp L. It's a good question. I'll ask her and get back to you all. And yes, UAW has taken it on the chin since 2008. When the automakers were brought to their knees and were on the verge of collapse, yes, unions took major hits. I'm not arguing that the union should be getting a huge payday. My point is, if they get anything less than what they've demanded, it's going to hurt Joe Biden. If they can't reach a compromise, it's going to hurt Joe Biden. That is my point. So I want to go back to Chris. I thought she made some great points. And I also wanted to share, I have been laid off twice. And I was on my own financially. I've done that for most of my adult life. Yes, my parents would probably be able to help me out in a true dire pinch. But I've never wanted to be in the position to ask. And when those two layoffs happened, I thought my life was over. And it, as you say, Chris, it puts... all of a sudden, everything's just a day-to-day survival. So I hear you, and I agree. My question to you, Chris, is what if you're wrong? And what if the demands in total, if agreed to, would start to put a couple or more than a couple, all of the big three automakers under? Right? You know, then you would agree we got to dial back the demands, right?
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't think so. I really don't. I mean, we've been taking it for so many years. I mean, I've been living this since 93. When is it going to change for working people? I mean, if we don't demand this, it's never going to happen for us. And I don't think that Biden's going to lose the presidency by supporting the unions. And if they don't get everything that they don't want, I do not think he's going to lose the presidency on that. I really don't.
From your lips to God's ears, if she's listening, Chris. I'm sorry, what did you say? Go ahead.
I believe the people in the party that come up, and I see a lot of people like on MSNBC, they're are saying things about, well, maybe he's too old, maybe this, maybe that. I see a lot of that, of people that I wouldn't expect that from. I think they might be a little bit more detrimental to Joe Biden than the unions being on strike. He came out in full support, which I thought was brilliant. I was very happy to see it. He's actually been better than I thought he was going to be. I was a Bernie person. I was a Bernie delegate in 16. I really have been pleased with a lot of what I've seen him do. Disappointed that a lot of the Democrats in the Senate couldn't get it done, because a lot of Build Back Better did not get done, the more progressive points of it. But I don't think it's going to kill Biden, especially if he continues to concentrate on the climate, jobs, mm-hmm. and working people. This has been going on too long. When you talk about pensions, pensions were good. We need to move back to that. Reagan ruined the pensions. He allowed them to be raided. All of this is theft. what's happening in these companies. This is theft, what they're doing. They're taking the workers' money and they're giving it to themselves. The people.
Well, I sorry to cut you off, Chris. We got a lot of folks stacked up. You're just making great points. And please keep calling in. Please keep telling me when you disagree. I think your perspective and your lived experience in your family really matters, and people need to share all that. One thing for context, let's always remember that one of our core values that I think everybody agrees with, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat here in the United States, is that if you're willing to work a good full 40 hours, that whatever you make in terms of a wage should be enough for your family to sustain itself. And that's where we should be setting a minimum wage. And if we did that better, maybe we wouldn't be in such pickles when it comes to organized labor. I also agree with you strongly, Chris, about pensions. We used to have retirement thought of it in as a three-legged stool. No more. We have a moral crisis as a country. What to do with so many scores of our grandparents and parents getting to retirement age and basically having to work until the very day that they die. Nick, you're up on the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you, friend? What do you think about the strike?
Hey, Maggie. Nice to talk to you. First time I talked to you, but I just have to think. I think the UAW is overreaching here. I mean, 32 hours of work for 40 hours of pay? Are you kidding me? I work 40 hours a week, and I get 40 hours of pay. And that's what I agreed to. And otherwise, it's just theft from the company. That's what I see it as. And I think that they're negotiating like it's 1953 when the rest of the world was in ashes and the United States was the only one on the boat. But like you said earlier, there are foreign automakers right now who can also make cars, and they don't have to deal with this. So that's how I see it.
Yeah, I think there's also one of the things, just in my view, thanks for the call, Nick, that's been a problem for unions up until recently, where there's been such a shortage in labor supply following COVID, is that the claim presumptively to the higher ground, I think, if you ask the general public what their perception of unions are, that perception, that PR question, has been at times challenging for unions. Certainly has been challenging for public unions of public governmental employees here in the state of Wisconsin. And I think sometimes you can turn off a reasonable centrist, maybe not Chris from Sun Prairie, who is a Bernie supporter, but a centrist, when they hear things like you're going to work 32 hours and get paid for 40. Chris, you're up. What do you have to say about the UAW strike?
Well, I first want to say thanks for the show, but I was a union negotiator for 17 years, and I'll tell you, the strategy that they have where they're asking for the moon, it's a losing effort. These companies are not going to take them serious until they are ready to sit down with serious demands. I mean, to ask for 40% raises and a 4-day work week, that, I mean, to these big companies, that's a non-starter. You know, to talk about what their CEOs make, that's a non-starter. They don't care about any of that. They've got a dollar amount in their mind, and they're going to stick to that. You know, it doesn't matter what a lot of these other people say. You might get them to move a little bit, but you're not going to get them to double or triple what they're willing to give you. I mean, that's just impossible.
I mean, this is the art of negotiation, and Chris, you know this best, right? If you were at union negotiating tables, which is like underlying all the huff and puff, and yes, you never start with your final offer. We all get that. But behind all the huff and puff, there's actually like real dollars and a real range that is doable for the employer. And if your ask is so far out of whack with that, again, that's my concern here, that with the demand so high, this could turn into a political liability for Democrats in 24. Thanks for the call, Chris. I appreciate you. Thanks for listening. I want to introduce my guest now, who's going to hop both feet into this UAW discussion. This is my friend Colleen Foley. She is the executive director extraordinaire of the Legal Aid Society of Milwaukee. And I'm also fortunate enough to call her a dear friend. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Colleen. It's really great to have you.
Thank you, Maggie. It's great to be here.
So exciting. So you've been listening. You got here a little bit before the appointed time. I appreciate that. Hosts freak out about that kind of thing. Well, what do you, you come from a union family. What do you make of where we're at in this moment?
Yeah, it's, I get it. You know, my dad was in the IBEW in Portland, Maine. Two of my brothers were union electricians. And, you know, coming out of World War II with not even a high school education, because he dropped out of school to join World War II. It allowed my family to, you know, I'm one of nine kids and we had a really good quality of life. My dad made excellent wages and unions were incredibly strong then in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And working class families could have a really nice lifestyle. And, you know, we've all seen what's happened in the past decades. And in some ways, you know, look what happened with Milwaukee County with unions making really huge demands that ended up cutting their own throats with Scott Walker and what happened with Act 10 and all of that. But I feel for these workers. I think, yes, you know, corporate profit and CEOs making just obscene amounts of money on the backs of workers for a long time. And I love it that unions are making a comeback just from a personal standpoint, because I think people in this country, working people, obviously have felt very left behind. And so, yeah, and I'm with you, the negotiating table, you start high, you figure it out. And I'm worried about what this means for Joe Biden, because, you know, how long does this go? How bad does it impact the economy? What does that mean for the Democratic Party going into the elections with a sitting president?
Yeah, it's going to be certainly an interesting time. I also totally agree with Chris from Sun Prairie that Joe Biden coming out strongly in support of the unions, I think, does sort of move that art of the possible potentially at the negotiating table a bit in the favor of the unions. And I think that's a good thing. Obviously, behind all of my commentary and nuance today is I just don't think the big three will get anywhere close to the set of demands that they have. I just think it's not just one bridge too far. It may be two bridges too far. And my concern flatly is if they are forced to agree to, if the unions are forced to agree to something that seems much less, that people may be so disaffected by that they may look to blame someone, and Joe Biden certainly would seem to be the face of that. We're going to take a couple more callers, then we're going to talk about the Legal Aid Society, which is, I know, what you actually came here to do. My friend Mark, we just got a little bit of time left. My friend, keep it quick and snappy as you always do. Mark, you there? Are you there, Mark?
Yeah,
it's
I'm
me,
here.
Margaret.
I'm here.
Come back to you.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah, and the state employees never really got princely raises, you know, when it comes. It was just kind of a canard that Republicans were able to toss out there, because I was a state employee, and I was actually in a union, professional union, and we never got really princely raises. And it was collective begging on our part rather than collective bargaining on the part of state employee unions to the state. But, I mean, I think perhaps you're right. We need a good, solid economic analysis of what the automakers can afford to pay to make the industry sustainable. And that's something where I think Joe Biden and get a good Keynesian and economics person in there to advise the unions. And this is what, you know, sit down and assist in the bargaining so we can have a sustainable industry and a sustainable labor force, including getting some of the benefits that we see in some of the other countries. Like in Germany, I was just checking it out. In Germany, you know, you get 4 weeks vacation a year and 6 weeks of sick leave at a crack if you need sick leave going there. And that's what their labor gets over there. And maybe we can't.
It's incredible when you look at what the actual, and I gave this statistic a bit earlier, these demands would put the hourly cost of labor with benefits to $130 an hour. A lot of foreign countries, that sort of averages out to 55. But even if you focus on Western Europe, because their healthcare delivery systems and markets are so much better than ours, even when you provide extremely rich benefits, they're able to do so at a cheaper all-in cost than we are in America. Folks, these are related problems, yo. You know, you can't talk about one without the other. CJ, I'm going to give you a crack at it after this break, and then we're going to talk all about the Legal Aid Society with my dear friend Colleen Foley. Keep it locked, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Jump into the deep end of the pond with us, 844-967-2789. Welcome back, everybody. It's the last installment of the Maggie Dawn Show this week. I will be back on Monday. Don't forget, your special guest host next Thursday is none other than Anya. Give it, what generation are you, Anya? Like, what exactly? I forget all. It's like I lost it after Gen Z. Is that like the millennials?
That's what they keep telling me. Yeah, my friends who are just a little older than me are millennials. I'm a zillennial, apparently, and then everyone younger than me
That's what the new people are called, yeah, Colleen. They're called zillennials. You're a zillennial?
I'm a zillennial, but the people even younger than me, like people in middle school and elementary school right now, they're Gen Alpha. It just keeps going, folks. Wait.
How do I get stuck with Gen X, a.k.a. the Twitter, and they get to be called Generation
Alpha? Because we got to Z, that's us, and now we got to start over. We ran out of letters. Mm-hmm. We don't know any other alphabets.
Can't we just call them like A1, A version 2 alpha? Okay.
I don't know if they want to be the steak sauce generation. That seems like a lot of pressure to put on someone.
That is good stuff, though. I prefer the Worcestershire, but steak sauce also very good. Couple of other programming notes, everybody. October 2nd, put it in the books. My friend Matt Salmon will be on the air with me for the whole hour, talking all things Brewers postseason. Matt is a baseball sensei. Of course, we'll also get into the stadium funding debate. Then later that week on Thursday, my good friend Bob DeVita, adjunct professor at UWM, will be joining me to explain what the heck is wrong with healthcare in the United States. That'll only take like 15, 20 minutes. Otherwise, it'll be personal chit-chat. Before we talk legal aid, CJ, I promised you a crack at this one. What do you think?
Thank you for taking my call, Maggie. Many hosts don't have the courage to, but the UAW, I've had family and friends when Janesville were thriving that think this offer or conditions are obscene. 40-hour pay cut, 32-hour work week, and some of the conditions, yes, I get. But the mere fact that what's that going to do to the cost of a pickup truck? What's that going to do for the middle class? So, you know, I think these CEOs are given conditions to meet, and I believe the companies have been record profits. Well, that's what you pay them for. So the mere fact, yeah.
So let me just, I just want to hop in quick, CJ, because we got to wrap it up. Do you think CEO pay is appropriate?
Unions, Maggie. I'm a member of three unions. I'm a member of three unions.
Yep.
Okay. So I'm a union member, but this is nuts.
What do you think about CEO? What do you think about CEO pay? It's okay. They're being paid appropriately for their value add.
They signed a contract based on performance.
All right. Okay. That's not helpful. Right? We gotta hold. Okay. Colleen, what does the Legal Aid Society do?
So the Legal Aid Society has been in Milwaukee County for 107 years, and we're one of the nation's longest operating public interest law firms, and we provide free civil legal services to qualifying Milwaukee County residents on civil issues.
And isn't that, you know, most of us know, you know, you watch like one episode of Law and Order, like you have the right to remain silent and you have the right to an attorney, but that's only a right if you're being charged criminally. And explain why that makes what the Legal Aid Society does really special.
Yes. Yeah, so in fact, we have, based on the criminal model, we have a project that just had its 2-year anniversary, and it's called Eviction Free MKE, and it's a right to counsel around evictions, recognizing that housing, how critical housing is to the health and stability of the entire community, and how fallout there impacts every system from the shelters, and has huge costs involving the shelter system and the medical system and the educational system. So that's a model akin. It's not constitutionally
guaranteed.
Exactly. It's not codified, but one of the silver linings of the pandemic is that funding became available to try a model that's grown nationally, and that we learned a lot from the city of Cleveland, who was very generous sharing information on lessons learned. So that, for example, you're right, there is no right to counsel in civil matters, but it does impact the lives of people, especially, you know, low-income people in our community with limited resources, and the fallout when people end up in court without a lawyer has repercussions throughout the health and stability of the entire community. So
it's incredible to me. There's so many things in our society that we know that if we made an investment here, the return on that taxpayer dollar to support that community wellness program, and they're always community wellness program, an eviction avoidance program is a community wellness program, that it pays dividends, that the ROI on that dollar is that we get back 5 to 25 cents. And certainly maintaining housing security for people in our community is probably, I would argue, as you've been explaining it and as I understand it, the number one thing. If you can keep people in steady and reliable housing, they're able to maintain employment. Mm-hmm. They're able to access systems and other benefits that they need. It avoids all kinds of much more expensive and much more harmful impacts to the community overall. And it's the sad reality that, and I'm sure you've had this experience as a lawyer, Kyle, as soon as somebody finds out you're a lawyer, they're like, hey, can you help me with? Mm-hmm. And there's like three things that get slotted in there. Some sort of like baloney, low-level criminal nonsense, right? A divorce, mm-hmm. or some kind of eviction slash property dispute. These are or a will or trust, right? Sure. Maybe those four things. These are the things of everyone's life that at some point in time, most of us brush up against.
And get asked about, right? I mean, to your point about return on investment, we have a national data analyst who's helped us to better record our what's happening with these cases, and there is a return on investment of $3 for every dollar spent. So it is a money saver.
I'm sorry, can you say that again? The economist in me is like, pause, this point needs emphasis. For every dollar we invest as a community in avoiding evictions, how many dollars?
$3.
That's three. It's a 300% return if you're a math whiz on live radio. I mean, that says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, so we're proud of that work. And we also, you know, so our work also involves affirmative legal services. So we have a partnership with one of the big firms in town to bring gold standard business law advice to entrepreneurs in low-income communities so that they can successfully launch a business. And
so important to get that set up right. We're just about out of time, Colleen. Yeah. You guys provide so much help to our community. If people want to give to you, if they want to start to know more about the Legal Aid Society, where should they look?
Yeah, so we have a website, legalaidmke.com. You can call us. We have a downtown office in Milwaukee, 414-727-5300.
What was that?
414-727-5300.
Awesome. Thank you, Colleen. I love you. Yeah, and I really appreciate the work that you and everyone at the Legal Aid Society does. You make the Milwaukee and by extension, Wisconsin community better. I'm Maggie Dawn. Thank you for listening. Back next week.